It's almost connected.
Welcome to Thursday, March 3rd. Should we be ready for the ice storm this weekend?
Yeah,
rain and freezing rain. I don't know. What am I, amigo? So that's why my graduate student wanted to come back early. He was afraid to fly in on Saturday, so he's coming back tomorrow. Any questions on the assignment on Tuesday? I think I'll make sure I weight that the same as all the other ones. I haven't figured out how to do that yet.
One of the questions, I think it's the cloud condensation nuclei concentration one. And two of the answers say that it's higher than other aerosols, and then one of the answers says that it's, I think, the same.
Oh.
So it's like higher than the same. So
I guess it should be higher and lower. I'll have to go through and it's supposed to be higher and lower.
Yeah.
So I guess I can make it so that there's a way I can go in there and make both of the answers the same. So it becomes you got a choice of higher or the same. And I'll have to go and fix that so you get both of them. If it's the higher one, I'll make sure both of the higher ones are the same, but it should have been higher and lower because I don't know if I can go back and change it. I'll see what I can do. Yeah. One should be higher, one should be lower, and the other one should be the same. I guess I need to put the answers right. Do I just change them around and then get it right? Any other problems that I messed up on the assignment? Okay, so that would be 1 point off for me. So I guess I only got 9 out of 10 on that one. You get to do the same thing. So my next assignment for today that's due in a week, you get to, instead of 10 questions, I want you to come up with 5 questions based on the last 3 lectures. Okay, so we have droplet growth presentation, ice crystal growth, and basic clouds. And I say 2 to 3, maybe 2 from each one of these and then 1 from the last one. So basically you could take this format and put a question here, question 2, question 3, question 4, question 5. And then, so I want you to go back and look at them presentations, make up a question, and then put the multiple choice answers. And with the first choice is the correct answer. Does that make sense? So the A answer is going to be the correct one. But you got to give me at least one other wrong answer. If not, 2 or 3 wrong answers. So it'd be nice to have like 4 of them. But if you really want, you can make a 2 or false question. And it has to be on the different topics. So, and it has to be in the form of a question. So that what I mean by that is question mark at the end of the sentence, at the end of the question, and you know, what, who, with, you know, who is, what is, where, so as opposed to, I don't really like the ones where fill in the blank of this. So does that make sense? Have a what does, who does, where is, what is. So start with a question. What is that called in English and grammar? I don't know what, where, when, how, and why. Type of stuff. At least you could have an introductory phrase. And then you got to put the answer. And if your answer is incorrect, you lose a point. So please put the correct answer. Okay, does that make sense? So 10 points, 5 questions, make them up. Make sure they come from each one of these presentations, and this should be a little bit less ambiguous in how to grade them. So so try that during a week, and I'm going to force you to actually make up these questions and go back and look at the assignments, of course, or the presentations. Of course, you can just look at the first 2 slides and come up with 2 questions, but or your favorite slide. And of course, if you don't know the answer, you can make up the question and I'll tell you the answer. So bring the questions on Tuesday. Does that make sense? Can you practice for doing this? This is what you should do for every lecture. So after the lectures, this way I'm making you do it, and I'm an assignment. And you may look at this. And then just upload the Word or PDF file with your questions back to the Blackboard site. Okay. And do it in a week. And the other one's due on Tuesday. And I'll have to fix that question somehow. Okay, we went over it last time. Oh, the other thing, the internships are due this week, right? So, yes, you got a question in the back.
Was that the review assignment that they want to take?
Yeah.
So, the new task report?
Oh, yeah.
Did I tell you the password should be the normal N 5 5 5? Right? Someone's done that before.
Did it work for you?
All capitals.
All capitals?
Yeah. It's the tail number of the Citation Research Aircraft.
Yeah, it got to be 3 5s and all caps. November 555
Delta Sierra with caps. And make sure your cap locks are not on, or if they are, then but gotta make sure to enter them. Okay. So November 555 Delta Sierra should be there. Because you need that for the respondus browser, because you only have 6 minutes, I think, to answer the 5 questions. So see how you do on the, or 10 questions, see how you do, and then go back and see what topics you don't know that you're not confident with the answer for. So then hopefully the second time through, you should get 9 out of 10. Okay. Anybody else? Okay. So before we kind of went through it quickly at the end of last period, but before we jump on to the next lecture, which is pretty awesome topic. Anybody have any questions? Basic high crowd types, high, middle, low. You know, the high crowds are your ice crowds, the middle ones are your mixed phase water and ice, and the low ones are your water containing liquid clouds. Yes.
The last time we were looking at the shape of the cloud, would that be?
So, the crispness of it, like in terms of, there's a couple of things you can see if it's, I don't know if it's crisp or bright like this. These ones here, so you see this part, yeah, you can see my, so here it's nice and bright and it's got a nice defined edge or crisp to it. This would be water type of clouds. It contains water droplets. Okay, when it's not crisp and it's more diffuse, like these ones back here, so the ice is up here. When it's not crisp, it's ice particles that are in the clouds. Maybe like these ones, these cumulus rotor ones, low level ones. You know, they're fluffy, crisp looking. They are water containing clouds. And you can see some of these anvils too, if you get these ones here that have some ice in them. So you want to see, and the other thing you might be able to look at, it's harder to show. You know, it's really, you want to see water appearance versus ice. Here's another example. You know, here you have all this water in this cloud, where over here you have some ice. So it's that crispness that looks like it's a cumulus water cloud. So why'd you put it? Yeah. And of course, the there's more droplets in the cumulus clouds per volume than there are ice particles from ice. They get bigger, but there's less of them in the clouds generally. Trying to see. And I guess the other point is kind of the vertical development. And it's more on this one. I like to clouds with vertical development. Liquid often near the base, ice near the tops. So a lot of water, particularly down here, you can see the rain shaft in here, the precipitation, but lots of water near the base of the clouds. But then when you get high, you get the ice. And you really want to look for that a lot of times to be seeding in one area or another. That's why you want to visually be able to identify them. And you can fly through them, see the water on the windshield or on the aircraft. Or you can have ice. If it's super cooled water, you can have ice and accumulate on your wings and your exposed surfaces. So, but it's really identifying where you would want to fly, what you want to avoid. And then, areas to avoid too. We got hit by lightning once by flying underneath an anvil like this. So if you're up high and you're seeing another flight sort of crowd, you don't necessarily see where the anvils are, but sometimes when an anvil extends on, it can be rectified there, and you want to not fly right underneath the anvils if you don't have to. We didn't have to. We were seen in the front side of a storm, and we want to get to the back to the base to land, and instead of kind of going around the anvil, we went right underneath it, and we got hit by lightning, which damaged one of our instruments, and it could damage your airplane. So you want to kind of avoid them potentially hazardous places. And we'll talk more about that at the near the end of the semester. Okay, today we'll go on to another topic that should be hopefully entertaining. Any other questions? It took me a while to put this one together. I'm going to hide this. Highest voted meeting. So precipitation processes. So how do we make rain, for example, on the surface? So this is a rain shaft picture that we took when we were doing some hydroscopic seeding in North Dakota as part of a research project. So how do we get this precipitation to fall onto the ground? And what do we understand about it? And how do we get these water particles that nucleate onto the make these small particles get big enough to fall as rain? So it's pretty easy to get these little cumulus clouds forming, but how do we get rain? And what's the process that we'll actually go through and form the rain? So some of this may be a little bit of a repeat of stuff we already talked about. For example, condensation, growth by condensation of, so condensation is the vapor to the droplet, condensed onto a particle, grown a vapor. So that's a condensational process. So one thing that we have, and I kind of mentioned this, but I give you some numbers here now. So water droplets, we have the size of them, droplet radius. Sometimes we talk in radius and sometimes diameter. Just remember a factor of two. Do you know the difference between scientists that talk in terms of radius and people that talk in terms of diameter? What type of scientist always talks in terms of radius?
Cool ones.
Cool ones? No, I think the cool ones are the ones that talk in terms of diameter. It's people that do more theoretical work talk in terms of radius. So theorists, modelers talk in terms of radius, and people that make measurements and experimenters talk in terms of diameter. Because the diameter is what we actually measure, but the radius is what you would use in a formula. Right, 4/3 pi r cubed for the volume of a sphere. So when you do theories and equations, you need radius. But when we make measurements, we usually measure the diameter because we can't get the inside of a droplet and measure. So I sometimes got to be careful, but we got the radius here as 1 micrometer, so 10 times 10 to the minus 6 meters. So 1, 10, and 100. And then, you know, that's just the R in the droplet here. Then we have terminal velocity. We talked a little bit about this. This is how fast the particle is falling. It's kind of, it's not an average. It accelerates until it reaches its terminal velocity and then keeps falling at that speed. Because then gravity and the drag forces are balanced. Okay, so V for velocity or speed and T for terminal. How fast does it go down? And you can do centimeters per second. And then we could see how far does it take, how long does it take to fall 100 meters? So 100 meters is a 10th of a kilometer, a little over half a mile, 5,000 feet. So this is fractions, 100 meters is 300 feet. So not very far. And then it's the time to grow to that size. So starting at nothing, we're starting at a cloud condensation nuclei. How long does it take to get to that size? So, yes.
We talked a while about droplet growth, yeah, as a whole, and like there was a bunch of different factors that affected droplet growth. Is there any sort of like, when you say like it takes 30 minutes to grow a droplet to 10 microns, is that under a certain set of like vapor pressure, solute, radius, any of that, or?
It doesn't really matter. Once you start it to grow one, it would take about a second, okay? The idea is that if it's a little bit smaller, it doesn't take a second. It takes about 0.98 seconds. If it's a little bit bigger, oh wait, it should be the other way around. If it's a little bit smaller, it takes a little bit more than a second. If it's a little bit bigger to start out with, it takes a little bit less, okay? But a lot of that is, will it start to grow at all? Okay, so because we talk about that in terms of the initial growth, initial activation and starting the growth process. But once it starts to grow, it will continue to grow even if the relative humidity, the vapor pressure goes down. And it will grow very fast, very quickly. So it's, it only takes a second to go from 0.05 microns up to 1 micron. Okay. So it initially grows very fast, but then it slows down as it grows. I mean, it's not like the same as humans or people, but you know, babies will double their size very quickly compared to someone that's 10 years old. You know, you don't, so you grow a lot slower as you get bigger. The droplets are kind of an extreme case of this. Okay, so 1 second, and we'll see this, so I can form in our crowd condensation nuclei instruments, I can form these 5 micron, well, 2 to 3 micron drops in a couple seconds. Okay, you can form these crowds when they rise very quickly. The problem is to get the, once you get to about 10 microns, that takes 30 minutes. And the hard ones are the 100 micron ones, right? It takes 8 days. But by that time, the crowd's gonna be all the way around the world. It's not gonna be there anymore. Well, you're not gonna be there anymore. So it continues to grow, but very slowly. And that's the other fall speed. You know, so if you have these cumulus clouds in there, I said it falls slowly. So what's slowly? Well, 400 days for the 1 micron drop. If it's 10 microns, that's 4 days. So your cumulus clouds, for example, the white puffy clouds I showed you, the biggest droplets are in there on these middle ones. So the white puffy cumulus clouds, their biggest droplets are these 10 micron diameter clouds. The smallest ones are, they're all bigger than 1 micron. So all the droplets in them clouds are bigger than 1 micron. And typically kind of smaller than 10 microns. Maybe there's a few very less than a percent, but they're in that range. If there are these cumulus clouds that are this condensational growth process, where the water is condensing onto the particle. So these clouds are up there and the drops are falling, but it takes 4 days for them to fall. The cloud is not gonna be there that long. Okay, and then the you know, terminal velocities are given because they're very slow, you know, 0.028 centimeters per second. That's why it takes so long. It falls very, very, very slowly. So again, you know, orders of magnitude, you should know the numbers for these, at least to have the idea that if we had only the condensational process to form droplets, we would never have precipitation, or almost never. Well, yeah, almost never. It is. If it's very clean, very few particles, there's a few places. I went to Namibia. Anybody know where Namibia is? No? It's in It's next to South Africa on the west coast of Africa. It's a country that has the lowest density of people because it's the whole country is a desert. The only precip they get is fog that comes off the ocean. But the fog is so clean and it's such a high amount of humidity that they can actually get water that will condense onto the plants there from the fog. Very cool. So you can fly along there and you can see down, you see this path just inland of the ocean where they have vegetation. And then you get too far inland for the fog to penetrate and there's nothing. Yes.
Did you say you lost like 1 degrees of magnitude? Do you mean like the 10 to the negative 6?
Yeah, I mean, that's why we go orders of magnitude. That's what I mean by 1 and 10.
Yeah.
That's an order of magnitude. The other thing is to know, you know, if it's hundreds of days versus 4 or 5 days versus the minutes, you know. Because there's uncertainty in these measurements, you know, 413 days, it doesn't really matter if it's 400 or 415. You just kind of have to know the general numbers, you know, order of the seconds, minutes, and days, you know. So I might have an answer. Does it 1 micron particle, how long does it take to grow from a CCN to a 1 micron particle? You know, is that 1 second, 10 seconds, 100 seconds, 1,000? And we could do the same thing with minutes. Hopefully you know that 60 seconds in a minute, so that's 60 times 30, 1,800 seconds. So on an order of 1,000.
So if I go up there, that means it takes 1 second to go from 1 micrometer to 10 micrometers?
No, it takes 1 second to go from nothing, from a CCN,
okay,
to 1 micrometer.
30 would be from
1 to 10. Well, 30 is basically from the same starting point.
Oh.
But it doesn't really matter, right? If it's 30 minutes or 30 minutes in a second, does it really matter? Because you just have to know the order of magnitude. So it doesn't really matter where it starts. But, and that's why I have this plant here. It's kind of like you start from a seed. I should have another one here. You know, start from nothing to get to a point. Okay. So. Yes.
That time to fall 100 years, that's not a terminal velocity.
That's at terminal velocity because it only takes a couple of seconds to reach terminal velocity. But so the terminal velocities are given here. Right? So you can just go through and calculate, like, I should probably check this, you know, in terms of, you know, if you're going in from 0 to 100 meters and you're going in at that 0.028 centimeters per second, how long does it take? Is that not the calculation? Approximately? Maybe some round off in that.
It might be in millimeters. Or time to fall 1,000 years.
I'm off by a factor of 10.
At least for the 100 micrometer one.
Well, do I have an extra zero in there? I'm going to put an extra zero. Try the 2.8. And then you got centimeters, so that's 100 meters.
I'm just using 10,000 centimeters, but it's 10,000 divided by 220 divided by 3,600 to get that in hours, and I'm getting almost exactly 1 hour.
Huh. I'll have to check my calculations. I took these from somebody else's calculations, but should be 3 centimeters in a second. Oh, I could do this if it was morning. So, hey, how about a good homework assignment to do that? If you're going to make me do it and check the answers.
Or maybe it's just not long term of velocity the whole time.
But it shouldn't take too long. So that's where it hits the terminal velocity, but it should not take too long to get to terminal velocity.
That's
down to
affect that velocity.
Air temperature, a little bit, but density does more. So the pressure and density, and that's the other thing. These are at particular density, and I think it's sea level, and 20 Celsius. But it does make a difference for the terminal velocity. And it actually makes more of a difference for the snow, which we'll talk about, ice crystals that we'll talk about later too. So I'll have to check my calculations. I think the growth times are about right. Maybe I got a number wrong. Maybe it's a 1,000 meters. I'll have to check. Okay, so note to myself, check on that and revise slide. Because I have another one here, and I'm pretty sure, and I gotta watch the units because these are centimeters per second. And now so these are still in centimeters per second for terminal velocities. So so now another way to look at this is to look at it, draw quote unquote some classifications of different size droplets. So if you do cloud condensation nuclei, they're very small. So if you do in terms of micrometers, 0.01, that's a large CCM. And you have a terminal velocity that's very small. So of course that's smaller than the cloud droplets. So let me go through here. We have the CCN, that's what they start out as with the nuclei. Then you got typical cloud droplets. Then you got large cloud droplets. And then you have cloud droplets and raindrops. And then you have the big raindrops. So we want to get from these CCN to these big raindrops that are falling. So as you go in bigger sizes, your terminal velocities go up. But just forming the droplets, your terminal velocities go up by, 4 orders of magnitude from 0.001 to 1. But they are still pretty small. The other thing you notice is we've added in here the number concentration. And just to confuse you, these ones are in number per liter. where a liter, 1,000 liters or 1,000 number per liter is one number per cubic centimeter. So a lot of times I use number per cubic centimeter because I'm more of an aerosol person than a cloud person. Cloud people talk in number per liter. But the other thing to notice is the number concentration of the cloud, of the CCN, and the cloud droplets are the same. Because every cloud droplet forms on one CCN. And when we actually measure them, because the CCNs are so small, we form the droplets and count the droplets. Okay. The cloud condensation nuclei are the particles that form droplets at that supersaturation. You can change the supersaturation, get more droplets, but there's a one-to-one correspondence. That's why the ends are the same. And then when you go to larger droplets, the ends go down by three orders of magnitude. And then we got the border between cloud droplets and rain of about 100 microns. And then you got the big rain droplets. And I try to show the sizes of these kind of relative to each other to see how they've changed. And a lot of this stuff has been known for quite a while because there's a paper that they talked about this in 1950s. So basics of this understanding goes back to the when we started doing this. So we want to get these big rain droplets. Here I have the terminal velocity of the droplets given as a function of diameter. And here we've changed to millimeters to kind of get to where the rain droplets are. And the idea is that the terminal speed, this is a logarithmic scale. So each one of these is a factor of 10. So it's 10 times as fast. So can you imagine that with an airplane? You never have factors of 10. You know, think of your slowest airplane compared to your fastest one. Is it 10 times faster? What's the slowest airplane you can have that you could fly it? How fast? 30 knots. So I guess you go 300 knots and 3,000. So then with two orders of magnitude, maybe. 300 knots, you can go. Definitely, right? 3,000.
They shut off.
Yeah. So here we have four orders of magnitude. But you get these 1 millimeter sized droplets. So millimeters is 1,000 micrometers. Millimeters 10 to the minus 3 meters. So you get these raindrops that starts to fall. And this is in terms of 200, this is in terms of diameter now. So 200 or 0.2 millimeters. Goes back to where we said in the previous one, which is radius, which is 100. So there's a factor of 2 again. And we're changing it from microns to millimeters. It's hard to have one unit. And it's hard for me to keep talking in exponents in terms of meters. 10 to the minus 6, minus 7, minus 8. So we like to change the units. So for completeness, look at the terminal velocities here of And I'm sorry, we changed units here for meters per second. We get meters per second here. And then the next one is, this is for water. And here we have ice particles or ice crystals. And so here is again meters per second, but there's only goes from, my finger all messed up. I messed up my little thing. I was trying to make it nice and neat. I'll have to fix it. Anyway, the main thing, I'll have to fix this one, is that you go from 0.05 to 1.5 meters. Okay, so that's in this range in here. That again, within your raindrops. So most of the ice particles, once they form, at least the bigger ones, fall relatively fast, and because they're relatively large. So this is again why you want to form either large drops of rain or large ice crystals. So that was the introduction that only took me half an hour. Now the point is, how do we form these large particles? Because I said we can't form them from condensational growth alone, because it takes too long for the droplets to fall and get to precipitation sizes to be able to fall. So there are two processes that we'll talk about. And one is the cold rain process, Bergeron-Fendizer. I don't think there's usually another guy that associated with that sometimes. And there's a warm rain process. So I got my thermometers here with the ice crystals, cold and warm. So one involves ice and one does not. Okay. So ice is the one that we'll talk about first, the cold rain process. So most of the precipitation in North Dakota involves a cold rain process. You have to go to someplace like India in the summer, or it's tropical, or even in Florida thunderstorms, you get ice and stuff. So we talk about the cold rain process first because it's more prevalent for a lot of the precipitation that we're interested in. Requires mixed phase cloud, which is both supercooled liquid water and ice. So that's what mixed phase means, two different phases, both water and ice. Remember, the ice crystals grow rapidly while the water droplets evaporate. And once you get them large enough, they can fall through the liquid water, correct the cloud droplets as they fall. So that's another process too. So we have a series of slides here. And I got these from some scanned images or something. So, but it's a process of how we get cold rain. And the idea here is to go through not an individual process of forming one drop, but how does a storm evolve? How does the precipitation in a storm evolve? Okay, it involves the microphysics, the individual problems, but this is on the post-storm. So we like to have this concept of an air parcel. It's like a balloon that's filled with helium. It's something that is kind of a conceptually a volume of air, you know, something that might be a couple hundred meters in diameter or bigger. So something you can fly an airplane through that is a parcel that would rise. But it has some confined similarity of movingness. So it's a concept that we like to use. And then we can look at this parcel, this average air, and say, okay, what's the temperature? What's the relative humidity? And where is it? So think of a warm day in North Dakota, not like today. So 20 degrees Celsius, 68 Fahrenheit at the surface, 50% relative humidity. And we are just near the surface. Oops. And then this parcel rises. It's warm. So the warm air will just rise because it goes into where it's colder. As it rises, the temperature goes down 5 degrees Celsius. And because the temperature goes down, the humidity goes up. So one of the ideas is the parcel is kind of confined, so we're not bringing in any air. So if you got the same amount of water vapor in there, and you cool it down, the humidity has to go up. And so it rises and by 2,000 feet. Okay. So the humidity goes up, and I'm going the wrong way when I hit my buddy. So now let's go another 2,000 feet to 4,000 feet. Temperature cools down now from 20 to 10. We get to 100% humidity. Okay, and this becomes the area where we can get to that supersaturated condition. Then once you get above that, because the humidity gets above 100% and we have a lot of these cloud condensation nuclei, you can start forming a cumulus cloud. That's that white puffy cloud. So that was at what, 6,000 feet? Now let's continue to have this parcel rise. Next interest in temperature is where we have freezing. 0 Celsius or 32 Fahrenheit. Of course, the relative humidity is always approximately 100% with respect to water. Okay, we never get much above that. We get a little bit of supersaturation to form the clouds. But if it's going to get any higher, we just form more and more cloud droplets. So, you know, because it's warmer than 32, we still have these warm cloud droplets. They're not super cool. So let's go a couple of thousand feet more, 3,000 to 18,000 feet. And now we can start getting to -5. And then you have your super cool droplets. So why don't we have ice particles yet? No ice nuclei, so no active ice nuclei. So that means that there are particles that would form ice. You know what I mean by active? So we're not gonna form any ice yet, but these are your super cool drops. Then go through that with your airplane and you can get aircraft icing on your wings. So and I guess I have, you know, you get some of these that are minus five, that's when you start to get the AGI that would be effective at these minus five or even colder temperatures. So you go to 25,000 feet and you get to minus 15, minus 15 to minus 20 is where your natural ice nuclei become active. And you can really start to form natural ice particles. And then these ice crystals will start growing from the vapor phase. You can also have ice diffusion, growth diffusion, or growth by diffusion. So remember, at these cold temperatures, the water is going to lose and evaporate, and you get ice particles that start to grow. And a lot of good dendrites. That's why the star like ones are the habit of dendrites. So a lot of times when we're frying in our winter storms, we fry at the minus 15 degree level. Okay, and so that's one of my jobs, right? If I'm in a flight scientist, is we fry up to the profile, or we have a balloon sound in. Okay, because I can't tell the pilot that, please, we need to go to minus 15. They don't want, you know, they need an altitude, right? So we convert that minus 15 to an altitude and say, hey, we want to fly at this altitude. And then round it off to a nearest 1,000 feet so that we can communicate with ATC. Because it's not exactly. And a lot of times we're flying long distances, so it changes. You know, particularly when we're flying on fronts and stuff, you can have one side that's cold, one side that's warm. So that's one of the things we do, is we say, hey, we want to study this dendrite growth of particles. So we find out when we take a profile, where is that minus 15? Because it changes from day to day with the weather conditions and season. So the other thing that can happen then is you get these particles. And now you see the crystals, they kind of form together. And this is what we call aggregation. When one particle hits another, and then they stick together. So this is aggregation of these ice crystals. So once they get to start sticking together, they can get bigger and they have higher fall velocities. Crystals collide, stick together. So that collision and sticking is called aggregation. Then if you have these particles, let's see here, and you can have some that fall or some droplets that come up there. You have another process of where you have water particles that can collide with these ice crystals. So if the ice and the water, they move at very different speeds. They have very different velocities. You can try to think of this as if you're ever in the United States, most of our traffic on the highways all move about the same speed. But if you go to some third world countries, they can have bicycles, motorcycles, carts, big trucks, and fast cars all on the same road. They don't all move at the same speed. Okay, so just think about that, that these big ones are gonna move at a different speed and be able to correct their ones. But there's a process called Riemann, where these droplets freeze onto the ice particles. So it cracks onto these ice surfaces. Riemann can continue, can grow faster, get bigger ones. They get large enough to be heavy enough to fall. So you really correct a lot of particles, get a lot of mass, get very big, and they fall. Then as they fall, they come back down. Okay. So again, I have here the tops of the clouds, you know, but we have these different areas. So if you look at this, you know, the tops are given here. There we go. So this is the tops of the clouds here, but we're looking at these particles here. You know, so this is where we're talking about in terms of these particles. So you see where the lines come from. They come from different parts of the cloud. So you got different parts of the cloud, and the whole cloud is evolving too. So lots of stuff is happening here. So it's not, you can't talk all about the same cloud because there's different temperatures, the different areas of these clouds. And there's updrafts and downdrafts regions too. So we go here where you can go back down below the level here of the 0 degree, and melting begins as it warms the air as it comes. So I have one of my graduate students, we're studying a lot by looking at these ice particles and how they melt on the way through this layer. So we can take and we can spiral down with an airplane and get measurements in this region. So that's gonna melt and because it encounters warm air. So then you form the raindrops from its melting. And that's what you get out of the bottom of the cloud there, is this melted ice. So this is one reason, like, a lot of the precipitation is actually snow that melted. You form the ice, you get the big particles, they fall. Okay, this is go back to the idea that it snows a lot in the tropics. Because you form this ice process, you form these ice crystals, then they fall when they get bigger and they warm up. And that's kind of the end. So cold rain process. It's complicated, but one of the main things for cloud seeding, weather modification, is getting these -5 to -15 super cool droplets where there's not a lot of ice nuclei that are available. But we do have effective AGI ice nuclei that you can put into these clouds and affect just a number of them particles. It doesn't take a lot of mass because the mass will come from within the cloud, get them big enough. So if you see these super cool drops and you have a cloud like this, it may never develop high enough to get above the 18,000 feet. But you can see this on some days, you get these clouds, they form, they just hit this -5, -8, 18,000 feet level, and you never get bigger ones. They never get higher and form the precipitation. You know, so if you can form this ice, these dendrites, then you can kind of invigorate and make that precipitation process more efficient. And sometimes the idea is that we get more area and crowds that will last longer and produce more precipitation, but not necessarily harder rain. Okay. So, complicated cold rain process. Questions? So there's different areas of the storm too, but the updrafts, fineness area where we have these super cold clouds is one of the key ideas. Okay. Maybe I could start talking next time about orographic and warm rain process. But let me maybe fill in here, see if I can get a couple of videos to show you. Make this a little bit more fun on. It's a let's see if I can show you the video now and we can talk about it next time. I'll find my website. Okay, let's see if these videos work. So let's see here. I got a couple I put on here this morning. And I won't play this one, but this one is kind of nice. Let's see if this one will play. So you should know about this. This is super cold water. So these are just plastic bottles. And you can go and have water in these bottles that are just super cool. And you give it a shake. And there's a couple of them. You see how it forms that from that clear one. And you can see this one is kind of see the ice form from the top down. See how it's moving there? So that's all the water that's below freezing forming ice crystals.
It's
oh, yeah. Can someone
hit that? Now, you want to hit the mics for me there? Yeah. That's not better. Maybe I can turn these down.
I'm going to fall asleep here. Is that better here? So let me play that again. See if I can. Oh, they make me do the commercial. What? Let me go back. YouTube videos, I want to do the commercials. All right, I'm going to put up with the commercial and then I can play it again. Is that what I'm going to do?
Skip ads.
Yeah, there we go. Skip ads. Come on, it's an ad. Oh, no, it's some other person. Oh, here we go. All right, now we can see this again. Yeah.
How do you end up with just a bottle of super cool water? Don't disturb it. So, okay. So take the. So you need a very clean bottle, so you don't have any of this.
And then you need to, you know, he leaves it sit there. So it'll work good if you had a place that goes from above, above freezing to below freezing, and you can just let them sit there. So like your garage or something, maybe if your garage is heated, you let them sit there, open the door at night, let them cool down to create this super cool water droplets. And they don't freeze because there's nothing to get them over that energy barrier. Remember? So typically, and you have to have, you know, clean jugs. These ones are full water for that. So he just takes these bottles and they just sit in there in the garage or in a place. And then he moves them around. That gives it a perturb. That gives it some energy. And it's a kick to get it over that energy barrier. Okay. So there's other ways to make a transition from water, super cool water, to ice. You know, sometimes they say just flying your airplane through there can perturb the air and give it that energy to create these ice particles too. Let's see, there's one more. If I could go back. Oh yeah, I like this one. Let's see if I can try this one. Oops. Pause. And so if you think of the, you know, I just showed you the ice that was, that water was super cool that forms ice. So this one is a video of a molecular dynamics simulation. So when I was doing my research, we could play with these computer models and actually model the process on like the atomic scale with all the atoms of water in there. So this is a simulation of what the atoms look like that would go from this. So the atoms, because they have more of them, they move around. But you see where the bluish green is? That's where your ice particles start to form. And there were some ice that started to form and stopped. But then it starts moving. But the ice is a crystalline lattice in three dimensions. But it grows from one area and moves across. That's kind of like how it was doing it from that last one where you had the top that was water and the ice moved down. And so the molecules are moving less slow because they have less energy. And you get a nice stable form of ice. So we can simulate this on the individual molecule scale. So them are the two videos that leave you with, and we'll stop there. Next time we'll talk about warm rain and coalescence.